This line is burning, turning to ashes. It hits the earth. Every step is a day in the week. It's a Sunday or Monday, March all the months of the year.
Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce. Today is the Sunday after the Epiphany. The Epiphany marks Day 12, the 12 days of Christmas. We are now passing beyond Christmastide, beyond the feast days that begin with Christmas traditionally, though in our modern Western secular world, they tend to end with Christmas. Some continuation through New Year's, long before Epiphany, it's all over, done with, and forgotten. But in our tradition, we hearken back to the older ways of looking at these things, to the 12 days of Christmas, to that echo of Christmas, or that quickening of Christmas that is the Epiphany. There are two stories that this day is associated with. The primary one in Western Christendom is that of the arrival of the Magi, the arrival of the wise men from the East, that in following some sign in the heavens, a star, they traveled. They went to go and see this change, to go see this newborn king, though they did not know any of the particular circumstances. It was enough. They could see that something was happening, and they went there. Whether this is any more than a story, we do not know, but it makes sense to us. And this day is celebrated in honor of their arrival, because it is not enough that Jesus was born. In our modern, secular, consumer holiday that we call Christmas, we keep some religious aspects to it. We keep the notion of this being the birthday of Christ, Jesus. But birth is only the very first part of the story. And if it was merely born, lived out a regular life, well, we wouldn't be celebrating anything having to do with him today. It is this otherness, this transcendent reality that we celebrate. And on this particular day, we celebrate it being recognized and realized. The wise men saw something in the heavens, something that indicated a new king had been born, something transformative in the world. In the ancient world, things like psychology, religion, astronomy, none of these things were separate. Everything was seen as being intimately connected. So to see this change, they themselves had to have been prepared for it, have had to have studied the sky, and then be ready to see this new star. Apparently, this wasn't a huge mass movement that everybody saw. There weren't vast migrations of people from the East to come see the new king. The story only has three. So it is a matter of being able to recognize. And recognition is one of the words for gnosis. Not only did they need to recognize that something was happening in the world from looking at the sky, had to be able to recognize when they came to inquire about the birth of the new king from the old king, Herod, was not too pleased with the notion of there being a new king, that it was probably best not to invite him to any celebration having to do with the new king. And they then had to recognize that there was something different, that there could be a king without an earthly kingdom. There could be a transformative event that did not change the political boundaries of the world. Look at the ancient world. Things are most often conjoined, particularly at this time, the time that we're looking at. After many centuries of divine kings in Egypt and Persia, Alexander became the Greek divine king, the divine emperor. And after him, the Roman Empire rose. The Caesars became the divine emperors. And so to see the birth of some new divine king manifested in the sky, one would expect something like an emperor, a ruler of the world, somebody who's going to change the world by power over the world. And one can only imagine, may have been like to be expecting to come to such a thing, such an amazing world-changing event, and find just some scrawny kid in a place where animals are kept with a couple of peasants. And so the story takes us through a certain cycle of expectations that people had in the ancient world, and it then flips them over, turns them on their head, turns the world on its head. Instead of there being a new emperor, a new Caesar being born, a new king even of Judea, there was a teacher born, Christ, Jesus. And that this event, seen as a cosmic event, and then was recognized by these wise men from the East, these magi. The other story that is associated with the Epiphany is usually more associated with the Epiphany from the Eastern Orthodox side of Christianity. And that is the baptism of Jesus. That, as Gospels tell us, Jesus began his preaching career and then went to go visit the prophet John in the wilderness, who was baptizing people in the River Jordan. And these accounts vary across the Gospels, they get a little more elaborate. First one just says that he was baptized. Next one says that he was baptized and there was something like a dove. There was something descending upon him. And a voice saying, "This is my beloved son." Full realization is that being proclaimed from the heavens and a heavenly dove descending. You get the whole special effects. And something certainly did occur. It is the only record we have, and only indication or story that we have, of Jesus undergoing an initiatory practice, being initiated himself, undergoing a mystery. And this has since perplexed more theologically minded Christians who wonder why, since they've already determined what baptism means, why someone who didn't need it would go through it. And so the answer is, of course, that it was an example to show us what to do. The Gnostic perspective has always had a more deeper view of this, seeing it really as being an initiation, an initiatory mystery, something that truly transformed Jesus and that began a new phase of his ministry. In some texts, this is seen as the Christ descending upon Jesus, as the coming of the divine into the human. And then this continues within him until the crucifixion, where it departs. And Jesus is left crying, "Why have you forsaken me?" It doesn't do us really any more good to think about these things in a physical, metaphysical, special effects kind of way. It does to think about the baptism as having special effects. they do point us to very important mystery. Mysteries are things that you can tell many stories about. Never exhaust. Never grasp them and hold on to them and say, I've got it right here. I've got the precious. It isn't of that order. It isn't of an idea. It's an experience. And these reports are reports of a very profound experience. We can only speculate, only guess. But something certainly changed. And the meeting of these two individuals, of the prophet John, the baptizer, and Jesus, these two important figures became something to then be thought about, to be understood in different ways by their followers thereafter. But for our purposes of looking at this from the perspective of Epiphany, this was an epiphany. This was breaking through something. Was a realization of the divine nature of Jesus. Whether we think of it as being something external coming down from heaven, much like the dove, or see it as a deeper revelation that we ourselves have some part of. For in each of us is this divine spark, the seed of light, and we can realize within ourselves part of this divine nature. So, this was a quickening of that divinity, a blossoming forth of that light, and the beginning of the transformation of the world. These two stories are big stories, particularly the second one. They generally get explained away or made into kitsch items like the three wise men on creche scenes, or merely described and explained away as an example of the Lord for us to follow. They're really important moments in the story, deep symbols, and we can follow them. We can try to experience in some small way, vicarious way, their real meaning by seeing ourselves in their shoes, and ourselves as seeking this divine King, of seeking this initiation of our true nature. The intent for today is divine guidance, and it is a very important thing to bear in mind constantly. Normally we don't look for divine guidance. Normally we try to find some way to figure things out ourselves. We might turn to somebody else here or there, an authority figure, an expert, somebody who claims to have the answers. But they are just all human beings. We all are. We're all in this together. And it isn't the role for any of us to try to live out somebody else's life for them. We just can't do it. No matter how compelling the lessons I may have learned from my life are, it's not my role to push them onto somebody else and say, you have to do this. Not the role of any of us. We can share, we can offer what advice we can try to bring in a different perspective. But really guiding somebody through their life isn't something any human being can do for any other human being. It is a matter of something more transcendent. The Gnostic tradition has always been this distinction between information, ideas, things that we can think about and get our heads around, and gnosis, which is much more fundamental. It's a part of us. It cannot be translated into any set of information or ideas. It is of a different order, different sort of thing. And it's hard to keep that in mind sometimes. We often think, well, we know what is Gnosis, we know what is Gnostic, what is the Gnostic take on this. But that's all putting things off into that realm of ideas. It's a different approach than the Gnostic approach. Say, if you think about these things in this way, there isn't any difference between these things. Of course not, because you're thinking about them. You've already moved them into a place where they are merely thoughts, merely ideas. If you do that, of course there's no difference. You've changed it already, even though you may not be aware of it. In Gnostic tradition, we must seek guidance for ourselves. We can benefit a great deal from those who've gone before us, those who have advanced further in the path. But ultimately, it rests upon us. No one else can do the work for us. We must do that work. We must seek it from the place that is our origin and our goal. And that is the divine, that which transcends our mere lifespan, goes beyond it. And this guidance may change as we go through our life. This is one of the things that people in Western religious traditions and Western philosophical traditions don't understand. People in Eastern religious traditions, philosophical traditions, do understand that the answer is not absolute. The next step doesn't necessarily fall into the whole framework of the cosmos. It isn't necessarily a part of some abstract philosophical, theological system. It's just the next step. And it is taking that next step that is important. Not trying to understand this all in some abstract way, as if we could apprehend it like some Platonic ideal form, completely hold it in our minds, and then know how to go about the rest of our lives. What we need to do at this point may be very different from what we need to do a year from now, 2 years from now, 2 days from now. Is being open to receive that divine guidance that is important. Be open to receive that inspiration, to receive the spirit, and to know and experience what it is that we are doing, what it is that we need to do next. As Gnostics, we're not following some mapped, plotted out game of life that is what you need to do, A through Z, to get into heaven. It is a dynamic path that we are piloting for ourselves. And having to pilot for ourselves, we must look out, see what can guide us. To look for that sign in the heavens, like the wise men, to guide us forward. Finding out what others have found out, using their maps, might aid us invaluably. But if we go out and we see that there's a difference between the map and where we're looking, so often people ignore where they're looking and try to follow the map. That isn't our way. Gnosis comes from experience, comes from seeing what is there. It can only come from experience. Experience the divine, experience the divine nature of things. A growing forth into our true nature. And this points us to another aspect of epiphany. And is that the lesson for today is a praising. Praising of Jesus. And if we think of these things in some abstract theological way, then it's kind of an ontological praising. We're praising the existence, the simple beingness, which is what ontos means in Greek. But the lesson has a different character. It's a different kind of praising. And if we look at this in conjunction with what we have already considered, baptism, this realization of something, then we can see it as praising of the accomplishment of something. Not a praising of existence. It's a praising of a completion, of an accomplishment, of a realization of something. And the gospel points us deeper, the gospel of truth. And it tells us more about gnosis than most other passages do. It says that the Gnostic is truly a being from above. He's called, he hears, he responds, he knows who it is that is calling him. When we have gnosis, we know. We don't have ideas. We don't have things that we've decided are true, like belief is. We actually do know. But you can't explain this to somebody who has no experience of gnosis. They don't have that ability to see between this thought and this being. It's like the example before. If you think about these things, they're all the same. If you think about gnosis, it's a thought. Whereas if you live it, it is a part of you. It is the most important part of you. And it gives us back our true nature, that a being from above, being transcendent, above the ancient way of looking at the cosmos, was the transcendent. And one hears the call. When it's connected to the transcendent, connected to the divine, and knows it, and responds. That is a key. There is no response. It's merely an idea, or an experience. You can have experiences without gnosis. You can have profound spiritual and inner experiences, and not hold on to them, not make that transformative effort that turns them into gnosis. Because you are not being transformed by them. You are instead transforming them. Instead of being transformed yourself, you're turning them into something that's much more comfortable. A revelation from God. Some confirmation of an idea you have. Those are much more comfortable than gnosis. Gnosis is difficult. Reveals your true nature, requires action, response. And the gospel also tells us that there's more than a mere response. It calls us to live out our life in service of God, in service of the divine. And that is the ultimate indicator of gnosis. We cannot look at somebody else and see their gnosis. If they tell us they have gnosis, we can believe or not believe, and there's no way of knowing. How somebody lives out their life, they truly feel being from above, truly understand that connection, they respond to that, they serve that, and there is gnosis unfolding within them. They are being transformed by it. They are not trying to transform it into something they could use in the world, or something they can use to defend themselves from further gnosis. Jung said, religion as a defense against a religious experience. Have Gnosticism as a defense against gnosis. So instead, this is the divine guidance. It comes from gnosis. In it, we are connected. We are called. We respond. We serve. And is this response that we are being guided to? Is this service that is our guidance? It shows us where we need to go, what we need to do, how we need to grow to transcend this limited place, transcend our current limited selves, to move beyond all of this. For it is a path of growth, path of transcendence, a constant going forth. And along it, there are many epiphanies, many realizations, many quickenings, many transformations. So may we keep this understanding, realize it in our own lives, keep our own epiphany in mind while we consider the stories of the Epiphany and focus on the realization of Gnosis, on becoming the person from above, becoming someone who knows that they are called and who responds. May the blessing of the mystery that which hangs twixt heaven and earth send upon us and remain with us all. The Gnostic calendar features the liturgical year of the Ecclesia Gnostica and many additional holidays and dates of interest. With original artwork by a Gnostic priest, the Gnostic calendar is truly one of a kind. Get yours today at gnosis.org/calendar. That's gnosis.org/calendar.